Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So if you have any doubts that the market doesn't care one little bit about who you are and where you are in life, all you have to do is look at the charts on the market activity over the last month, and you'll find a great deal of confusion, which we are going to try to bring some clarity to today. This is Investor Resources live radio program. So if you want to call in with a question about your portfolio, you can call us at the 800 number, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. I'm glad to talk about a position that you have, a recommendation that's been made, or something that's just troubling you with your current portfolio. It certainly has been a challenge for close to a year and a half, and we aren't quite at 18 months, but we're coming up on the number that has been a whipsaw market with unusually high volatility. In fact, we're going to touch on some of this volatility as we get later in the show. But the bond market has never been this volatile. And when the bonds are uncertain, everything that's tied to interest rates and bond valuation goes topsy-turvy. So if you want to talk to us today, the number is 800-465-8770. So one of the things that has dominated investors' hindsight bias is the long run post great financial crisis of tech stocks, better known or nicknamed as the FANGs. That was Facebook, which is now Meta. Some mangs doesn't have the
that
same.
That doesn't have a nice ring to it. No, that doesn't work. We can't. So we can't have. It's like some kind of pet disease. Yeah. So
mange. That's what it sounds like. So we got the FANG. We still call it FANGs. Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. And now there's FANG Plus, which is Microsoft. And in the current market, given the rapid rise of interest rates over this past year, the FANGs, which don't generally pay dividends and often don't have current reasonably profit expectations, their profit expectations are in the future as they continue to grow. High interest rates changes the outcome of the math, and they're not doing as well. They used to dominate the NASDAQ index, and with the S&P index being left behind because it didn't have any technology, the wisdom at tech or at S&P, they changed the components in the index so they could share the glory. And so they added some of the tech stocks. And Tesla at its very peak, which is
literally right at the top. Yeah.
Those are the smart people in charge of the markets. But what happened lately is that Apple and Microsoft have been dominating the U.S. market, while in general the FANGs have been struggling to bring up the rear, so to speak.
Right. It really is a demarcation where Microsoft and Apple have been concentrating much of the investment money coming in their two companies, and the rest of the FANGs are really trailing off to the point where, you know, they're kind of saying, well, I think the FANG trade is dead. There's going to be something new pop up because it's always a marketing thing. But right now it's Apple and Microsoft pulling far ahead of the other traditional FANG stocks on the tech sector.
So in the S&P 500, Apple and Microsoft have combined now represent 13.3% of the index. Mm. It's the highest level on record. It's been since 1978 that we've had two companies have such a great share of the benchmark. And back then it was IBM. Who?
Right.
Yeah.
And AT&T. That was Big Blue and Ma Bell. You didn't even need a ticker for them at that time. They were so big. And now they're both much more in line with the rest of the S&P. They're no longer at the top of the list.
But
funny how that
happens,
huh?
That is. But for most investors, hindsight bias overweights current adaptability to market conditions.
Correct.
They're still focused on the robust gains of years past and saying, well, they were good companies. I made a good decision. They'll be good again.
And they made a lot of money. If you own FANG stocks for the last 10 years, you've been doing great. And people don't understand that those trades do not go on indefinitely. They do change. And you do need to alter what you're doing to reflect the current market environment instead of, well, the past decade, this was a beautiful trade. Yep, it sure was. Is it still? Not so much anymore. So that's the kind of adaptation that we advocate making in portfolios, that pie chart allocation that you got from your investment advisor doesn't do. It just stays the same. It changes so slowly over decades that it's pretty meaningless. It's just buy and hold, and it never recognizes what's going on currently. And there's a danger in that.
So there are young companies coming up, nipping at the heels of these big companies. You say, well, they're so big, that can't happen. We just mentioned IBM.
Talk to IBM about that, right?
Right. I mean, that guy in the garage with that DOS program, what's his name?
Doesn't matter. We don't need that anyway. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. Gates. Yeah. Who's he?
He
dropped out of college. He can't be a problem. Well, he managed to take IBM off its pedestal, and it has taken them decades to recover, and they have yet to catch up with Bill Gates. Anyway, that FANG trade has fizzled, and that's why when we look at portfolios, we want to look at leadership. What is ahead of the current market? Because it does rotate. Even mutual funds who work very slowly at changing their portfolio shift their emphasis. They rotate where they're concentrated based on the changes that are going on in the stock market. Companies become profitable and they start climbing the ladder of performance and they dominate their marketplace bit by bit by bit. And suddenly that big company that people would just kind of take for granted gets knocked off its pedestal. At least it gets knocked down a couple of steps. And then over the next decade, a couple of steps more. So it's important to quit hanging on to the past and look at what's going on. And right now, there's a great deal of confusion in the marketplace.
Isn't that the truth?
And it's coming from the top leadership in the country and in the financial system. And we are going to continue on that theme throughout today. If you want to talk to us today, the number is 800-465-8770. And if you do not receive our weekend review, which we normally put out on Mondays, or holidays accepted, that goes out Tuesday or Wednesday, I mean, we get it out. Send us an email.
It will happen. Yeah, it'll happen.
It does happen. There's occasionally, in the holiday season, the end of the year, occasionally we'll skip a week, but that's rare. If you're not receiving that, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Put week in review or WIR in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the email so we can put you in constant contact, which makes it possible for you to have a one-click unsubscribe if you decide we wasted your time. That doesn't happen very often. One of the things that has changed in driving markets is the presence of social media.
Well, yeah.
Now, this
huge change.
Last, Yeah, it has changed. This last week or so, we haven't actually had financial panic. But I think if it hadn't been for social media, when the newspapers, because we go back a few decades to a new era, an older era, the newspapers would have had headlines about the recent bank collapse.
Sure.
Collapses, plural. And that would have caused a reliving of what we see in pictures from the crash in the 20s. And there was a crash in the teens. And people would have been lined up outside the bank saying, I want my money now. Well, one, you didn't have to run down to the bank because you got on your phone.
And you could take your money out on the phone, yeah.
You logged into one account, and you logged into another bank, and you set up a new account, and you punched a few more buttons and put in a security code, and voila, your money was no longer at the one you were worried about. And these panics aren't new. I mean, they don't last, generally, they don't last very long, certainly not since the 30s, and the banking system went through a lot of regulation. But this is the first one with social media to drive us up the wall. And let's come back and talk about this when we get back from this break.
Okay, we'll go ahead and take our first break of the morning here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update webinar on the calendar. That's scheduled for Saturday, April 1st at 8:30 in the morning. You can register for that by going to IRIradio.com. That's IRIradio.com. Just head to the webinar page and give that registration link a click, and you're going to get an email back, and there's a link in there. And on April 1st, you just click that link, and you will be live online with us. We'll be able to show you the charts that we're talking about all the time. We're going to be able to go through what's going on in the economy, what's going on in the markets. And we always have plenty of time for the questions that anybody who logs in has. We work through all the questions that come up. So if you have questions about the market or the economy, or if you have questions about a specific security you're holding on to and you want to know if it's still something you should be hanging on to or not, we'd be glad to give you a second opinion on that, show you the charts on your security. Again, you can register for that at IRIradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us here this morning, give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at IRIradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
Inflation is pushing its way toward 10%. I'm Don Creech, along with Perry Sykes. We host Investor Resources every Saturday morning. The Fed is no longer in the Alfred E. Newman "What Me Worry" camp. The Fed does not know how long current inflation will last or how many more times they will hike interest rates. Professionals are analyzing the new Federal Reserve plan for rate hikes, which are especially damaging to bond portfolios. Owning bonds is no longer a plan to protect capital. Have you adapted to a bond bear market and a bear market in stocks? Just what is your plan? Buy and hold isn't a plan. Adding bonds because you're older isn't a plan. Real risk exposure isn't a result of your age. It is a function of market conditions. Have you adapted yet? Get a free portfolio analysis. Email us at help@IRIradio.com or call us at 800-317-9119. Be sure to register for our next stock market update at IRIradio.com. That's IRIradio.com.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be a little...
Well, there's certainly been a lot of rain in the market of late, and a lot of that has been driven on by participants in social media. You're listening to the Investor Resources Live radio program. You want to talk to us today, it's 800-465-8770. The line is open. Well, there's multiple lines, but 800-465-8770. So we went to break. We're talking about financial panics and the contribution of social media has created the first panic that has been driven by access, wide access to technology. I mean, and Twitter's been a major player in this whole process of dissemination.
Right. Yeah.
This does not bode well for future situations of potential panic. As people become more tech savvy, they get better at clicking the forward or share button, and rumors create panic. Twitter was one of the
They really do. You know, we talked about it all the time back when the internet first became prominent, and how fast financial information was disseminated changed the way the market worked, because you didn't have to wait for the Wall Street Journal to come out the next day to find out, hey, what's the news here? You knew it at the same time everyone else knew it. And so it changed the way markets worked because the information was out there so quickly. That doesn't mean it was always accurate. That's the problem, especially with social media, because it's not someone like the Wall Street Journal putting out some information who may have done some due diligence already. It's just Bob who, you know, saw something and put it out as, hey, here's what's going on. You better do something quick or you're going to lose all your money. And somebody else will pick that up and run with it. And then all of a sudden it's viral. And then, you know, the next day you find out, well, it wasn't really that bad, but, you know, that's already happened. So that's, it runs away so quickly right now that you really have to monitor what you're watching, monitor who you're listening to, and be very measured with what you plan on doing with information like that.
Well, that's the important part, is who is it that's actually the source of the information? I have people on Twitter that I follow who happen to have some really good credentials, and they're worth paying attention to because their opinions have been documented to be well-researched before they spout off. But once that goes out and the next guy picks it up and maybe comments on it and his comment gets forwarded, you pretty soon you lose the validity of the point of origin. So
sure.
On Twitter, with regard to the bank failures, there were people who were making legitimate, cogent, well thought out, that's redundant, opinions on there. And they provide links to back it up.
That's a good tip right there, yeah.
When I do my daily emails and I'm opining on stuff, I include links and say, you know, if you don't like what I said about it, go read this, research on it. But the problem is then you get a lot of people who really don't know a lot, but they do have an opinion. So you end up with, the panic that was internal, and part of it became, if you don't bail out Silicon Valley Bank, the entire technology industry will collapse and the economy will go kaput. And so the bankers, for whatever reason, the Federal Reserve and Treasury, and they put together a special provision created over the weekend to bail out everybody who had money on deposit at Silicon Valley Bank. Well, there was a lot of money in excess of FDIC insurance because the tech companies kept their payroll and their cash reserves, in many cases, at SVB.
Correct.
So
there were companies
with millions
of dollars on deposit. Yeah.
Yeah. How are we going to make payroll if they close this bank down? That's not going to look good. And I think I mentioned last week I had posted something about the bailout of SVB being a bailout of Democrat funders, because most of Silicon Valley votes Democrat to keep the money flowing into fund projects. However, Twitter decided that it was a fake, it was not factually correct that Democrats were primary depositors of the bank. so they wouldn't let me post it. But be that as it may, how did all this happen? Well, basically, it was a function of free money that we have had for a decade, with the Fed keeping interest rates at virtually zero, and of course, the federal government funding their COVID shutdown mistake, putting a lot of free money out to both households and businesses. Free money turned brains to mush.
And the as it will do, yeah.
Yeah. Now, people quit making rational decisions. The Fed.
That's why Vegas works, right? you hit it big, and then you stop thinking, and that's what happened with most of the country.
So the Fed didn't break anything with its rate hikes and its quantitative tightening, but it did break the hallucination that everything was always going to go up and there would be plenty of free money. That has changed. And now people and management are trying to figure out, what do we do? This is different. This isn't the way things have been. Of course, they haven't been that way because the people making the decisions are 30 years old. And they've never seen a bear market.
Never seen it before, sure.
They've never lived through high inflation. In fact, that's true for most of the people at the administration and
sure.
Many of the people who are in doing the research at the Fed and the Treasury. They're just too young to have
seen. It's important to remember, most of the inflation we have is not because of the Fed. The Fed helped, but most of it is because of all the money that got dumped on the economy, and then the global shutdown and the supply chain being completely disrupted. So, I mean, that's the definition of inflation. We had too much money chasing too few goods and services, all engineered by global governments, all engineered by the people in charge. And they thought they were going to get away with you know, nothing happening because, you know, the Fed had rates at zero for a decade trying to kick up some inflation and completely unable to do it. And all of a sudden they have, you know, two scoops of inflation and now they're not sure where to turn because most of this they didn't cause. So their tools aren't the great ones to stop it. So they're in a bit of a bind and they're acting like it. They're not sure what to do and they don't mind telling you, we're data dependent now. You know, we're going to go week to week to decide what it is we're going to do because we don't really have a direction in mind here yet.
No, that's like saying, we don't know. We don't have a plan.
That's the one.
We are going to punt the ball when it gets in our hands again. So what you mentioned is the supply chain. The supply chain is not as damaged as it was right after COVID, but it is still not completely healed. Discussions among carriers in Los Angeles over the past couple of weeks between the shipping carriers and the unions has not gone well. I mean, they're not striking, but they haven't come to an agreement about where rates, shipping rates should be per container, both as a function of fuel cost, labor cost, and demand. Demand is strong. Supplies remain somewhat weak. And that could be reversed, but it would require congressional and administrative action. If you want more supply, you lower taxes. You make it easier to expand a business, which is lower regulation, and you make it easier to hire people so that there's competition for wages. And neither Congress nor the administration are doing any of those things. So supply issues are going to remain, and as long as that's the case, inflation is going to remain higher. And as you just said, Perry, the Fed's tool, which is interest rate, can't solve the supply issue. And when the proposal out of the administration is, let's raise taxes, making it more expensive for businesses to work, they'll have less money to expand their business. They'll have less money to pay their employers. And let's increase the regulations so it's more difficult to do business. Those are all inflationary factors which are going to continue to upset markets. Volatility is high, and it's going to continue that way. And what happens is, in the media, you end up with fear merchants. wherever you look, you can find somebody who is telling you that the world is coming to an end, that Armageddon is quickly approaching just due to the financial and the global turmoil politically, you know, between China and Russia, Russia and Ukraine, Iran. I mean, if you want to look for things that are bubbling up to the surface and creating uncertainty, you don't have to look very far. Taiwan, South Korea, these are serious issues that cause fear, that promoters of fear and some product that's going to solve your anxiety, they love
it. That's it. Yeah, they love it. They're usually, if someone is really peddling lots of fear, they're probably selling something. They're either selling a newsletter or they're selling a financial product that's going to solve the problem that they just delineated for you in great detail. But it's almost always a marketing ploy, and it's almost never even close to anything that's real. So it's so important to do your own homework, do your own vetting when you see those things come up. Don't follow them blindly, and don't just say, well, this person, you know, works on Wall Street. This must be true. Nuh-uh, not even. You know, you really need to look for yourself and make a decision and not just follow someone who's saying, hey, you know what you need? My newsletter. That'll save your life. Everything else is going to sink your ship. So you got to watch out for that.
So here's a couple of tweets that came out recently. Quote, "You should be absolutely terrified right now. That is the proper reaction to a bank run and contagion."
There you go.
The president and Secretary Yellen must get on TV tomorrow and guarantee all deposits up to $10 million or this will spiral into chaos. Well, okay, that hasn't quite happened yet. Is there some ongoing risk with the financial system? The answer is yes, there always is. The question is, to what degree is it going to dominate and spin out of control? The real problem is what happens when others who are in your social circle, who are financially ignorant but have an imaginary PhD in economics, start telling you what to do.
Yes.
It's time to disconnect that feed, that friend sometimes. When we go back to 1928, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 major market declines in the S&P 500. The worst one was 1931, where the market lost 43%. 2008, very uncomfortable, was the second worst of the 9 bad returns in the S&P 500. And it was down 36, almost 37%.
That was painful. Yep.
The question is, for most investors who are buy and hold, and if you're in a 60-40 portfolio, 60 stocks, 40 bonds, you're in a buy and hold portfolio. You may not call it that because quarterly they're going to rebalance the assets that are not going to be sold, and you're buy and hold. Well, if you hold long enough, you end up eventually healing. The difficulty is, well, actually, it's a benefit, is can you step aside in the beginning phase of those major declines? And the answer is most people don't even try, because the financial services industry has a financial interest in you staying where you are.
And that financial interest is huge, and it is very meaningful. Let's get into that, Don, when we come back. We're at the bottom of the hour. Time to get out of here for a break. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have a weekly email newsletter, The Week in Review. It goes through current financial news and lets you know kind of what's important and the things that you may even be hearing a lot about, but you can probably safely ignore. If you'd like to sign up for that, you need to send us an email. Send that email to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and then we need your first and last name to get you in the system, and you will begin receiving that on Monday. If you'd like to talk to us this morning, feel free to give us a call about all things financial and investing. 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You're listening to Investor Resources. Check out our website at IRIradio.com and log on for a free report. That's IRIradio.com. Don and Perry are waiting to answer your questions now at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770.
Investors are ignoring inflation and the changing economy. I'm Perry Sykes, and along with Don Creech, we host Investor Resources. Investors ignore warnings that lack immediate consequences. It's like running red lights without an accident. Soon, you think you're good at running red lights, but eventually, your luck runs out. Unfortunately, by the time most investors figure it out, it's generally far too late to do anything meaningful about it. Get a free portfolio analysis. Email us at help@iriradio.com or call us at 800-317-9119. That's 800-317-9119. Register for our monthly stock market update at iriradio.com. Be prepared. Again, register for our monthly stock market update at iriradio.com.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Well, that's Kenny Rogers. I mean, he made a career out of that, made a career out of singing, but he made a real career out of that song. I didn't realize how much of one he had, but this last week I stumbled across The Gambler number 5.
There you go.
I'm thinking
there was a few movies.
I didn't realize
in
that he had made sequels to the movie. And in number 5, he's chasing down his son, who has become part of the gang with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And we watched half the movie last night. I had no idea that if you've got a gig that works, you want to keep working it.
Do more of that. Yeah, if it's working. So,
and that's kind of the same thing about investing in the market. If you own something that's working, you want to keep doing that. And if it's leadership, you stay on the horse that's running ahead of the pack. But most horses run out of wind at some point in time. And that's true of industries and sectors. That some do well during recessions, others do well during periods of growth, and they aren't the same. And paying attention to that. And the standard portfolio is, it doesn't matter. We'll just own a bunch of all of them. And as the economy cycles, we'll have parts of our portfolio that work and parts of it that don't. And that's just life. And bonds aren't safe. They're just normally a volatility mitigator until COVID came along and inflation reared its head. And bonds, since the peak in November of 21, have had the worst run ever. I mean, this goes back into the late 1800s. There's never been a worse year for owning bonds. And the difficulty of a bond portfolio it's like a sword with two sides. We now have higher interest rates, so there is another alternative to investing in the stock market. But higher interest rates mean the bonds that you bought last year or the last decade aren't worth as much, because it's a teeter-totter, interest rates on one end, value on the other. And therein lies the problem for the banks. The problem at Silicon Valley Bank was it owned a lot of long-term bonds trying to get yield, trying to collect a higher rate of interest than zero. And now interest rates are 5. Well, that bond for 20 and 30 years out is worth substantially less than it was when they bought it. And the fact is, virtually every bank in the country is in the same situation. That's the reason people are demanding hoping that the powers that be, the Fed, Treasury, and the administration, will raise the FDIC insurance above the $250,000 so that they don't worry about it. Well,
which Janet Yellen came out and said they were going to do, and then came out again and said, well, they weren't going to do it, and then came out again and said, well, yeah, I think we're going to do it. So everybody's trying to figure out if they're really going to do it or not. So that would be one place to get a little clarity, but not yet, apparently.
Well, it's surprising that Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell hadn't had a conference to explain or to coordinate what they were going to say about this issue.
That would have been smart, yes.
Clearly they didn't.
No.
And I have said before, when Janet Yellen was chair of the Fed, she had testimony in Congress that was absolutely irrational. And she has shown us this week that she hasn't learned anything from that experience. Her explanations remain irrational about what the Treasury is going to do. However, the system isn't collapsing. And
correct.
We don't like to know, we don't like to admit this, but we know that the mega wealthy run the world. The people with the most money.
The phrase is always follow the money. That's not for no reason. And the more money you have, the more influence you have. And that's just the system we live in globally right now. And it's always been that way, come to think of it. You know, it's always been that way.
That's true. But if things go south and the banks and corporate borrowers vaporize, it's game over. I mean, there's nothing you and I are going to be able to do. We are all going to be trying to figure out how do we operate in this new world. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, you're part of the Montana militia or you're a wrangler on Yellowstone Ranch. I mean, then
there you go.
You have
got a
resources.
Chance.
That's right. You'll survive because you've got big enough territory to deal with. But bad stuff tends to follow concentrated bets. So
almost always. Yep.
You have to be careful. When Silicon Valley Bank was a concentrated bet, meme stocks are concentrated bets. And
yep.
Most investors in meme stocks who have been winners are big money players, not the day traders who are making bets on AMC.
Especially if you try to stay there. Again, you know, it's like, hey, I made a fortune. I should keep doing this. You had to make a big hit and then get out and stay out. Otherwise, you got taken down with everybody else. Because, you know, the one thing about our monetary system in general is it does tend to find an equilibrium. And if there's something out of whack a long way, like a meme stock play by a lot of people who on social media all went one direction at the same time, when that reverts back to the mean, you're going to lose all that. So you can't just stay there. It's not going to, it's that anomaly is not going to stay profitable. The market arbitrages those out of existence. And that's just what happened. And you end up losing. You can't just sit still.
So I'm going to remind you of something we've said before, and that is the media's job is to terrify you.
Oh, there you go. That's true.
If they can terrify you and motivate you to watch or listen more frequently, it increases their ability to raise advertising costs.
And that's their prime therefore. And the stuff in between is just trying to keep you on that channel till the next commercial comes. That's their job. And getting you scared is the best way to keep your eyes on the screen.
Normally, I mean, it's just the way we're built. Human biology dictates we pay more attention to threats. Sunny
right.
skies, there's nothing to worry about, nothing to do. Go on with my life. And that's part of having a system of how do I deal with all this changing information. I mean, at the present time, all of our portfolios, the ones we manage for people both inside 401k plans and outside individual accounts, they're all on defense because conditions are not conducive to being fully invested in the market. You have to watch what you're overweight. And right now, what we are overweight is defense. Because the market doesn't have clarity about where things are headed. You know, bad news travels kind of like Novocaine. It stings initially, but eventually you get numb as it works its way through the system. That's the same thing with bad news. Pretty soon it's, I've heard that before. Yeah, they told us that last month. Okay, you know, on with my life, on with the decisions. Yeah, there's nothing that says falling markets aren't scary, but it's better to face fears realistically with the process of decision-making, that you're paying attention to the process and doing what your rules say, because the market will return to normalcy.
So hopefully you do have some rules. That's important. You've got those are so compelling in times of great market chaos like we're in right now. And you're getting conflicting messages now more than ever, every day. Everything's fine. Everything's great. Everything's terrible. We're all going to die. I mean, it's both all the time now. And you need to have a means by which you can look at what you own. And take a lead from that. Never take a lead from a narrative that someone is trying to sell you on TV or in print. You never know what it is their motivation is. You never know where it is their end game is. What are they heading? Where are they heading? What are they trying to drive you towards? And it's usually, you know, a sale of some kind. And you need to really make sure that you don't let the fear merchants define what you're doing. Because that's never going to work well. That's never going to work well, except for the fear merchant. They're in this for themselves. And it's important to remember that there's a lot of people out there that are in this to make money for themselves. They don't care if you make money or not, but they don't have any problem giving you direction and letting you know, exactly how things are going to unwind, even though, of course, they have no idea and they never did.
Well, we don't have any idea what's going forward because we don't know the future,
and we say it out loud. Yeah, we don't know where we're heading. That's right.
and there are times when you say, I don't think the Fed does either. Case in point,
sure,
is that the Fed this last week said basically they expect the country's GDP to have about 0.4% growth this year. But then if you go to the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now model, they say growth is going to be 3.2. So apparently, even from one regional office to the other, there is some lack of clarity. So don't feel bad if you feel a little confused, because apparently the guys at the top are too.
Correct. And it's important to concentrate, like I said, it's important to concentrate on what you own, your personal economy, and what is right for you, rather than what anyone out there says, this is what's coming, this is what you have to do. And usually if anyone's saying this is the only move you can make, shoot a flare. That's a problem. That's somebody who's trying to make some money off you here, and you need to be very, very cautious there. We are up against our last break of the morning here. I'd like to remind everyone that we have our next market update webinar on the calendar, scheduled for Saturday, April 1st, 8:30 in the morning. And you can register for that by going to IRIradio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. We get a great response to those. It's well worth your time. Come on out, get online and get a second opinion about what's going on out there in your portfolio, whatever it is that you own. We'd be happy to take a look at that for you and give you a second opinion. Again, you can register for that at IRIRadio.com. We've got plenty of time to get your call on the board. Give us a call here this morning at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
This is Investor Resources, the program that sheds new light on your investment strategies. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at IRIRadio.com. That's help at IRIRadio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
Warren Buffett's rule one is don't lose money. Rule two is remember rule one. I'm Don Creech. Along with Perry Sykes, we host Investor Resources. No professional or successful investor ever bought and held for the long term without regard or respect for the risk undertaken. Groceries and gasoline are more expensive, crimping consumer spending, the lifeblood of our economy and the stock market. As the economy slows, portfolio risk increase. A balanced portfolio is not a plan to protect capital. Rebalancing isn't a plan to protect capital. Buy and hold isn't a plan to protect capital. After you have losses, it's too late to do anything meaningful about it. Get a free portfolio analysis. Email us at help@iriradio.com or call us at 800-317-9119. Be sure to register for our next stock market update at iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. That's the Christy Minstrels.
Remember who that is, we know how old you are. So
that's right. I just ran across that doing a search on Kenny Rogers, and I thought, man, this should be the theme song for the green energy movement.
There you go.
And you turn around and you look at this push for green. It's actually hit the news this last week with Ford saying the EV production, electric vehicle production, won't be profitable for at least 3 years, meaning maybe 5 or 6. GM said they're going to take big losses as a result of their move into electric vehicles. And the promotion is, particularly at Ford, and I don't know that it applies to their Lightning F-250, but you take an electric Ford pickup saying you get 300 miles out of this battery. That's right. Until you put your camper or trailer on it, and then you're lucky to get 100 miles. That's likely to reduce demand for these vehicles if you can't load them up with your normal tools that you would fossil fuel powered vehicle,
sure.
Whether it's gasoline.
You don't want to run them around empty. That's not what they're for. So.
And then you look at California with the green. We want you to be green, but we don't have enough electricity to let you charge your equipment. And we don't want you to use natural gas. We want you to use an electric stove, but we don't have electricity. It's green. Thanks. Green on the far side, yeah, of the hill. That far side of the hill. Toyota has this right, I think. The CEO who's just leaving Toyota is Mr. Toyoda with a D-A instead of a T-A. He said, the industry's messed up. This is going to take 30 years to transition to electric vehicles because we don't have capacity to support them. So the Toyota is doing a hybrid focus rather than let's get rid of our gasoline-powered cars. Ford and GM.
And he was roundly criticized in the industry as being way out of touch. You don't understand. You don't get it. And, of course, it turned out he was the one that's looking very correct right now in that we just don't have the infrastructure for this to work. It just can't happen right now. It's not even that people don't want it to happen. It can't happen right now.
But there must have been some pressure on him because I don't know whether he resigned or the board suggested he leave or retired. I mean, I don't know what those conditions are, but he's out and a new guy in, and the new guy's saying, oh, no, we're going to do electric vehicles. So this
eventually.
Area is eventually right. But the other area where there's a major change that has people concerned is in whether or not you're going to lose your job because of artificial intelligence. There is a substantial fear, particularly in the white-collar area. Now, the one area that is not working well for AI is in finance. When it comes to building a portfolio model, one of the really smart guys in my coaching program took the AI and basically challenged it to build a stock market portfolio process. And after several iterations, it finally said, it's too chaotic. There's no way to do this. So apparently we're going to be okay. But if you're talking about law or accounting, creative writing, creative art, there, in fact, we had a session with one of our marketing consultants, and he showed us some of the things that AI can do from an art standpoint and from a branding standpoint, that just a few basic instructions and all of a sudden this stuff is just popping up where we
can just ask for something. Here's what I want to see, and bang, it comes on the screen. It's pretty amazing.
Well, it did have some flukes to it, but if you ask often enough,
as usual, it's not flawless. Correct.
But this is also maybe related. I'm not sure I should make that correlation. One of the other things that we've seen happen here is that a lot of men are either quitting college. They go and they find out, hey, this I don't buy this stuff. I'm going to go get a career that doesn't require a college degree. And frankly, we need a real increase in the number of people who can fix cars, build houses, build factories, do electrical stuff, plumbing stuff, the trades that used to be a dominant labor force in our country. And we've focused so much on college education and academics that we have a lot of people with academic knowledge and no real understanding of how the world works, which case in point leads us to Silicon Valley Bank and the reason the Fed and the Treasury have been so mixed up about how to deal with the current market environment. And the marketplace will figure it out if they'll leave well enough alone. It always has, and that's one of the reasons America has been an economic powerhouse throughout its lifetime, and more so as time has gone on. But the academics often think they know better, and they want to put limitations on the market. But what we have with ChatGPT is that this new technology spells dangers for telemarketers, teachers, lawyers, psychologists, mathematicians, accountants, proofreaders. Well, there is a fairly long list. Mm-hmm. The question is that there's a, how does any one individual know as much as AI can tap in its resource to solve a problem, to provide an answer, to give you direction? Nobody can. I was listening to the show ahead of us is Longevity Medical, and a question came in, and Jerry Mixon was Googling during the show, trying to find the answer. He said, everything I come up with is the components of the medication, but not the name of the medication. So you have to ask the question differently. But even Jerry, with his extensive knowledge and experience, has things he doesn't know. And AI can probably find it quicker. So part of this is productivity issue and learning how to use these tools.
And productivity is good. We want productivity to increase. It always has. That's one of the major deflationary powers at work in our economy is productivity improvement. But that kind of improvement in any industry means they're going to need fewer and fewer people. Even if initially you're going to need more, initially there could be an expansion. They're going to have way more production, but the companies keep refining the productivity level, and that eventually means we need fewer human beings. We're going to automate this process to the highest degree we can, because that's economically the best thing to do going forward, which means where jobs are going to change again. And you know, we've seen it before when we went from an agrarian society, we had the Industrial Revolution, a whole lot changed in where you could work, what kind of jobs were available. We've been going through that transition ever since, technology became a prime driver in the economy. And we've seen technology continue to improve productivity, and that's going to continue to change where jobs are. And now artificial intelligence is just moving so quickly, which terrifies a lot of people, because we're not sure we have it correctly harnessed and we can keep it in a productive direction, which is very exciting in and of itself. But we don't know where that's going to end up, but we do know it's going to change productivity levels in many, many occupations to the point where, why do I need that person there? You know, all I needed was a representation of the some knowledge of all the rules, say accounting. What does this mean? Well, they're going to crunch that and give that to you very, very quickly and very, very efficiently. So it's going to change, even if you need accountants to stay there and make sure it's giving you information that's accurate, you're going to need fewer accountants. You're going to need fewer attorneys. That's the way it looks like this is going to head, which means the job market's going to change, and you kind of need to be ready for that.
Well, it means we need to be flexible with regard to our employment opportunities and be willing
sure.
to change our educational background, our preparation, and adapt to this. So generalizing, this is a story here. Automation arrives and increases productivity, eliminating some lower-paying human task. If there's competition, that increases quality and reduces prices, mm-hmm. which causes demand to soar. This increase in demand creates so much more work that companies hire more people to do the tasks that are not automated. But at some point, the improvement in quality and prices saturates demand, and people don't want more products, so they stop buying much more, but productivity continues to improve. More and more tasks are automated, volume of sales doesn't grow as much, employment drops. This explains a lot of why agricultural jobs disappeared and the horses. People prioritize food. If you increase productivity, you'll produce more food. People will buy more. They just couldn't afford it before. But now that hunger's covered, they don't want more quality. They want a quantity. They want more quality. We are coming up to the end of our show. If you aren't receiving our Week in Review, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Put WIR or Week in Review in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the email. You want to talk to us during the week, it's 800-317-9119. We're out of time. God bless you, your family, and the United States of America.